What's up, everybody? This is Grant at Cause Artist. Welcome to the Investing in Impact podcast, where we interview impact investors, general partners, and family offices from around the world. Each week, conversations will bring on industry insiders to discuss the latest news, topics, and trends in impact investing. My apologies for the delay on new episodes, but the Investing in Impact podcast is back with weekly episodes this year. And when there's big news in the industry, I'll be hopping in with quick updates on those interesting topics. As always, if you have any questions or thoughts, shoot me an email at grant@causeartist.com. In episode 66 of the Investing in Impact podcast, Cause Artist contributor Raphael Alden speaks with Anshul Magotra, co-founder and partner at Social Innovation Circle. Anshul shares her journey from a career in banking to working in the impact venture sector. She also talks about how she stumbled into the world of social innovation through volunteering at Ashoka, where she discovered the power of social entrepreneurs and their innovative solutions. This experience led Anshul to co-found Social Innovation Circle, an organization that supports social entrepreneurs and impact investors. Anshul emphasizes the importance of funding for social entrepreneurs and the need for expertise in finance and business to help them scale their impact. She also highlights the role of angel investors and the creation of a syndicate to increase the flow of capital into social enterprises. Anshul also touches on their unique business model, which revolves around coaching, capital, concepts, and community. When you get a chance, please share, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. Enjoy the interview.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. And today I've got with me someone I've been trying to get on for a little while, Anshul Magotra from Social Innovation Circle. Welcome, Anshul.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here today with you.
I'm really glad you joined us. You're doing some awesome work with Social Innovation Circle, and I really love some of the things that the team and yourself have built around supporting early stage founders, building social impact startups. But I like to learn about how you get into these kind of roles for listeners who are perhaps coming from traditional banking or non-impact kind of related areas. So can you introduce to us sort of a bit about your background, where you came from and what this journey has looked like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as you mentioned, so my journey has also been, I started my career in banking, actually. So getting into impact, I would say I sort of stumbled into it. So I grew up in India. I studied in India. I finished my my MBA in India. And after that, I started working in banking. My first job was at Merrill Lynch in Hong Kong, where I was working on equity derivative products. So I did a lot of exotic structuring and sales. And I did that for a few years before the great financial crisis actually crashed all of that out of the market. And after that, I moved into corporate and investment banking. And I did that for quite a few years. And I came to a point where I wanted to do something different. And it wasn't just because, of course, you know, we heard about investment banking and the long hours and whatnot. But I just started feeling like I wasn't getting worldview. I wasn't really understanding what else was out there. It just felt like it was very siloed, my life at that point in time, where everything was about work. All the people that I was meeting was just, you know, they were just bankers, be it an office or outside office. And it really felt that I had no clue about what else was happening outside the world of banking. Mm-hmm. And so various reasons kind of coming together, and I decided to take a clean break from it. Of course, the situations were also conducive at that point in time that I could actually leave banking to try out what else was there. And it was, I would say, now when I look back, and a lot of people have told me this, it was a courageous decision and all of that. Yeah. But yes, it was circumstantial at that point in terms of, again, the fact that I could do it. So yes, it was risky because I had nothing in my back pocket, which is, you know, how usually people change jobs. But I really just wanted to explore. I really just wanted to meet people and see what else is out there. I wanted to understand what else is going on in the world outside of this space that I had been in for the last 7 to 8 or I think around 9 years or so. Mm-hmm. So I quit banking. I was in Singapore at that time. And the next few months, I just took the opportunity to meet people, and I met people from all kinds of backgrounds, all sorts of, you know, workplaces and whatnot. And one fine day, I stumbled into somebody from this organization called Ashoka. Mm-hmm. And Ashoka is the largest network of social entrepreneurs globally. And to be honest, at that time, I had not even heard about Ashoka. That was my starting point.
Yeah,
I had no idea about the social sector. And because I was all in for taking, you know, for learning new things and for trying out new avenues, I thought, okay, let me just try to figure out what this is all about. So I started volunteering at Ashoka, and it literally opened my eyes to a new reality. And I, again, came from this thinking that, you know, social sector is very direct service, that, you know, most of the things that they do is specifically, you know, things around building a hospital or providing some sort of relief, you know, disaster relief and schools and whatnot. But what I saw in Ashoka was the kind of work that social entrepreneurs were doing, the kind of innovations they were coming up with, the kind of business models they were setting up, which were really changing the way systems were running, right? They were doing things which were beyond just direct service. In fact, most of it was indirect in the sense it was capable of changing the systems in which they were operating. And mm-hmm. it was very, very innovative work. Because one of the mainstays of Ashoka is literally the search and selection of these social entrepreneurs that it calls Ashoka Fellows, who are coming up with the most innovative solutions towards the social and environmental problems we are seeing in the world today. So the when I started working with these Ashoka Fellows, it literally blew my mind away. And I found it so interesting to learn about these innovations. I started thinking about what is it that I could do over here. I was really enjoying myself. It was new for sure. And in the beginning, it was also a bit of like, oh, am I in the right place? I don't even understand this terminology. What is really happening? But as I started working more and more with Ashoka Fellows, I kind of figured out what my role in this space could be. And that mm-hmm. came about as a result of all the conversations that we had. And we figured that, of course, one of the biggest needs for social entrepreneurs, and, you know, they are amazingly motivated. They are incredibly genius. And, you know, they are coming up with amazing, amazing ideas. But there is a need for funding, which is what they struggle with. And you can't expect them to have all the expertise around it as well. They are busy running their organization mm-hmm. and they need that support so that they can then raise funding to be able to scale their impact. And so I thought this would be a good sort of a fitment for me, where I work mm-hmm. with these amazing people and I bring my skills into this. And that's when, and to be honest, at that time, it also, I would call it luck for that matter, but Ashoka had just landed a project with UBS. And this was a global project, and it was an impact, you know, investment accelerator. Mm-hmm. And since I had just about come on board, and they were like, hey, you banker person, you know, why don't you lead this? This is banking related. So why don't you lead the Asia Pacific leg for this?
Okay.
And that's when I came in touch with the person who was heading the social finance team at Ashoka, who's now my co-founder, my business partner as well. And I knew this is perfect. This is exactly what I want to do. I want to work with these amazing people, and I want to support them whichever way I can. And possibly the only way I knew how to do so was supporting them in raising funding.
Very cool.
I joined that team, and we worked with like hundreds of social entrepreneurs and supporting them in getting investment ready and building, you know, financially sustainable business models. And that was essentially my journey and you know, how that sort of pivot took place. And eventually that led to the launch of Social Innovation Circle 2 years back.
Amazing. So I want to dig into a couple of areas. So obviously you had to do sort of financial study, etc. We went into banking. You know, you've got big brands there, Merrill Lynch, Standard Chartered, DBS, etc. When you decided and had that opportunity to kind of like reflect, etc., was there pressure on you at that time to just go into something else? Because I don't know, I hear this especially from Indian friends, that there's sometimes pressures from parents, expectations and other things. Did you have those pressures, or was it more that you'd kind of, because you've been established long enough in finance, you were given that, you know, you felt you had the freedom to reflect and to see just what else was out there?
Yeah, so thankfully there was no pressure from mm-hmm. from family or otherwise. Yes, in the Indian system there's always pressure, because there are certain kind of, you know, streams that you take up, which you're very, very well aware of as well. You know, you get into your MBA, you do your engineering and so on and so forth. And which is, I think, why I I got into investment banking in the first place. I was clueless at that time. I had no idea what investment banking was all about.
Oh, really?
Because it was, yeah, I mean, I was, what, 23 years old?
Yeah.
And this is, you know, back in the day. So I didn't have much of an idea, but just because it was the in thing, I sort of went ahead and did it. And to be honest, I enjoyed it as well.
Yeah.
Just to start off, but but there came a point when I, as I mentioned, I wanted to see what else was out there. And the situation allowed me to do so. So there were no pressures as such. It's just that during that period, there was that constant internal sort of the internal pressure that, you know, one puts on themselves, like, okay, you know, I have this stellar degree and I have this stellar background. What am I doing with my life? You know, what is coming next? So that kind of internal pressure was there, but thankfully nothing else. And then and I think it has really worked. If I look back, having that sort of that sort of support from family and from my husband and everybody else has played a huge role. Because I mean, given where I am now, I wouldn't have done it any other way.
Yeah, and so you started with volunteer work, was it initially when you made the jump? Or?
That's right. But that was just for a couple of months though, because once UBS came in, then I joined them as a consultant.
They wanted
me to come on board as a consultant.
And I guess that was the big transition in a way, because you could sort of talk the banking language and had already kind of understood Ashoka as you know, how the system worked. What were one of can you give us an idea of the kinds of things that were getting exposure to at Ashoka that you'd never seen before, you know, in your banking world?
Well, I would say, you know, the first Ashoka fellow that I met and I read about, and I still give him a lot of credit. I work with him today, but I still give him a lot of credit for getting me to make that shift in my mind that this is what I want to do. And this is a gentleman by the name of David Green. He is a healthcare entrepreneur. And what David did, and this was back in the 90s, and, you know, when I read about it, when I joined Ashoka and when I met him, and it opened my mind to new realities, which I never knew existed. So what David did was that he launched a project in India to provide equipment for cataract surgeries. So these are the lenses that are used for cataract surgeries.
Okay. And
prior to his work, cataract surgeries were absolutely unaffordable for the majority of people in India that needed them. And we're talking millions of people, right, who earn less than probably $2 a day. And the surgery cost was probably in a couple of hundreds, right? And
right.
So it was absolutely unaffordable for them. And the main reason for this high cost of surgery was the cost of the lens, the intraocular lens that is used. So what David did was that he found a way to reduce the cost of the lens, same quality, same type, but he reduced the price by more than 90%.
Wow.
And as a result of that, the surgery cost was slashed by a huge percentage, and it enabled cataract surgeries for millions of people in low-income communities in India. And this has scaled to various, his technology has scaled to various countries, and literally every year, millions of surgeries are done for the poor using the lens that David manufactured, right? And he set up a facility in India to do so as well. It's called Aurolab. And what David did after that was extremely interesting as well. So he knew the potential of the technology, and it was already helping millions of people in India. But he knew that to scale such a technology so that other countries and other, you know, hospitals in different parts of the world could use it, he knew that he needed funding to be able to do so, right? And so I would say David was very ahead of his times, and he actually launched an eye care fund partnership with Ashoka and Deutsche Bank at that time, which was designed for projects that could utilize this technology. And I would say it was probably one of the first impact funds of its time when it was done. And you know what David says is that at that time he had no idea if there would be any takers for something like this, right? An impact fund, people had no idea about impact, and he thought at the most they'll be able to raise perhaps $1 million or $2 million, you know, to get this going. And they actually ended up raising $30 million at that point, which was huge.
It's amazing.
And, it was a debt fund. So they went out to make loans, all of which were fully repaid with interest. And of course, the impact has been tremendous, right? So this example kind of made things very clear. Firstly, just working with David was like, this was incredible to be able to work with you know, with David after that as well. But it kind of made things clear for me, which is firstly the power of social innovation, right? What David came up with the intraocular lens, And the fact that this innovation could lie anywhere in the value chain, it need not be just in the product or, you know, what's the service that you come up, that you've come up with. It could be in the manufacturing side of things. It could be in the delivery side of things. So, you know, when we think of innovation, it has to be broader than the typical understanding that people have around innovation.
Great.
And the fact that solutions can be scaled effectively, but they need funding, right? They need funding. Funding is such a critical factor. And that there are thousands of entrepreneurs like David who need this kind of support. They're doing amazing work, but they aren't finance or business people. So they need people who understand business, who understand finance and can speak that language and help, you know, to speak in front of investors and explain the business model. And at the same time, kind of show that you can create social impact while creating financial sustainability and profitability. And I would say that was kind of the turning point for my career as well, because when I saw this, I said, yes, this there is a place for me in this ecosystem.
Amazing. I mean, first of all, what incredible work David's been doing, because like, like your site is something you absolutely take for granted until maybe it starts not being perfect. And like, can you imagine how life-changing that, you know, that is for people, especially, you know, without access to the kind of cost, well, without health, proper healthcare and without the ability to fix their eyesight. So that's amazing. Did you find you were coaching the startups, supporting the startups to kind of translate this amazing work into viable, like, financial opportunities for the banking side? Or were you trying to kind of bring the banking side to the opportunity that, that social entrepreneurship offered at that time when you were still there?
Our work at Ashoka was primarily, you know, with the social entrepreneurs, so really supporting them in getting investment ready. So it was, you know, running a lot of courses and training programs and accelerators, and doing a lot of one-to-one coaching as well to get them to a point where they could start speaking with investors. And as is the case with social organizations, and this is where it differs from probably commercial investments, and because I've been on both sides, I can compare, the work starts much early. You really have to work with them right from the point of, okay, what is the mission that you're working on? What's your vision for the world? Okay, what's your theory of change? You know, tell me about the products, your business model. You know, you have to go through everything and get them ready. And typically how we worked with them was to get them ready and then get them to start meeting investors. And I would say the ecosystem at that point, and I think largely now, though things are changing, was more angels investing in social impact and some impact funds that had started coming about. But doing a lot of collaborations with banks, if that is specifically, you know, what you would want to know, wasn't that easy to come about. Of course, off late, you've seen a lot of blue bonds and green bonds and all of that coming about. But essentially, the kind of work we did was more around private investments, right? So it was more in the domain of angels and impact funds.
Yeah, so important, angels. Did you find yourself dabbling in any angel investments yourself, or was did that feel like a conflict?
No. I've done them myself. Yes, yeah. I've been investing for a few years.
Yeah.
Well, yes.
Amazing. So I know yourself and your colleague were at Ashoka. So tell me about that transition to the genesis, if you like, of Social Innovation Circle.
So yes, exactly. So me and my two co-founders actually. So I would say we are a team of impact investors with. Over 20 years of investing experience, and specifically we specialize in social finance, which is what I mentioned, which comes on the back of this investing history, as well as the fact that we've worked together for many years training and coaching social entrepreneurs, right? And again, how they can develop fundraising strategies and raise investment. So this unique experience of ours, actually, it puts us in a kind of a sweet spot of having extensive practical knowledge of being investors ourselves and having worked with entrepreneurs on fundraising, right? So what we do at Social Innovation Circle is we coach both funders and founders on what we've learned through this journey. We share our knowledge, our know-how in how funders and founders can be effective impact innovators. So we run courses, trainings, workshops, accelerators for social entrepreneurs, for impact investors, for fund managers, even for, like, you know, corporate employees and universities and so on. And then we have an investing arm, which is called Social Innovations, Innovation Capital, through which we make investments into a select number of social entrepreneurs or social enterprises that we worked with or trained through the year. right?
Yeah.
So and in, if I can add to that, what we've also created as an extension to our capital arm is a kind of a syndicate of trusted angel investors with who we co-share deals. And the objective is, of course, this way we access and share quality deals, but we also it also helps in increasing the flow of capital into these social enterprises, right?
Yeah.
So if you were to kind of visualize this circle, I mean, we call ourselves Social Innovation Circle, so it's essentially a circle. And it has four key pillars, which is, you know, coaching, capital, concepts, and community. And it's kind of like a virtuous cycle that feeds into each other constantly. And it's a very unique business model in that sense, because if you start with the pillar of capital, rather than looking for investees to invest capital into, we've created a model where we train and coach social entrepreneurs. And then we invest and we pick a few out of them that we want to invest in. And that is where the capital arm comes into play. So that's the second sort of pillar around that. And whatever, and you know, all of this, which is the coaching and capital investment, because we continue advising our investees, it helps us to stay updated with new business models, with new ideas, new innovations. It helps us to refresh our content. So that goes back into all the content that we build, right? So as I mentioned, it's a cycle that feeds into each other. And then finally, our objective is to create a community, right? We want to bring investors and investees together. And the effort is to create a community of impact innovators. And that's essentially what we're trying to achieve with Social Innovation Circle.
Do you find that you're leading that concept stage in terms of, as you're a capital investor as well, are you like going, oh, well, this is an area of social impact for the, you know, let's pick one, gender diversity or whatever it might be, inclusion. Like, do you find yourself almost starting researching an area and then trying to find founders? Or are you more founder-led, where the founders are coming with all their different concepts and you're basically coaching them to get them investable? Which way tends to...
Yeah. So because our kind of the funnel starts from coaching, and when it comes to coaching, we are sector agnostic, right? Because when it comes to social finance, it works for everyone. So we are sector agnostic as far as coaching is concerned. Of course, if any of our clients wants to do an accelerator in healthcare, we'll go ahead and do that. But we are not kind of married to just a couple of sectors. So it kind of starts from there. And as you rightly said, it begins with the founder. If it has to translate into investment, it always begins with who the founder is. What is the social problem that they are solving? How passionate they are about, you know, pursuing the social mission? What is their deep understanding of the social problem? So it always begins from there. And then through our conversations, through our understanding of their work, their innovation, if it leads to investment, then great. But otherwise, yes, a large part of what we do is pure training the entrepreneurs so that they can they become financially sustainable and can raise funding in the future.
Amazing. So it's sort of a flywheel that you're trying to create, right? Where you're bringing in, of course, community is such a big part of it, because the word of mouth you get from the social innovators who you've helped and who you've potentially also invested in, I'm sure that brings more people to the table, and it's kind of creating a happy circle of more customers as well. So what's your most like the courses you do, what's your most popular course, just out of interest?
Okay, so our flagship course is called Financing Your Impact. So that's a course that we run in-house, in the sense that that's an SIC offering. And that is for social entrepreneurs. Again, it's investment readiness, but it's got a broader perspective than that. It's really to understand, okay, how do you finance, as the term says, how do you finance your impact, right? And that can mean various things. That can mean, how can you think about revenue diversification as a way to sponsor your to fund your organization? That can mean exploring different ways of funding and not just relying on investment. So it's a bit broader in that sense. But we do a lot of accelerators and partnerships with some of the key clients that we've been working with over the last many years. And some of them are sectoral, some of them are not, but obviously all of them are kind of grounded in social finance.
And some maybe like corporates and things, or is it more? So you'll help a corporate to who's got, say, a specific SDG or area that they're looking to create, you know, or help sponsor innovation inside of.
Yes, absolutely. So perhaps I can give an example. In fact, that's an accelerator we are running right now, and it's with an organization called Boehringer Ingelheim. which is a healthcare, in the healthcare sector. And we've been working with them for the last many, I think, 5 to 7 years now. And they have a huge initiative in Africa, which is called Making More Health. Mm-hmm. And what they do every year is that they select social enterprises in healthcare in Africa, and they support them in various ways. One being that they help them to launch a pilot as part of the organization that's already running, but a separate pilot project. And they give them all the support that is needed to see if the pilot would take off. Mm-hmm. And if there is potential in the pilot, then they offer them scale-up support as well. And separate to that, they also offer investment readiness support to these ventures. So we've been working on this investment readiness accelerator as part of this Making More Health program for the last 5 to 7 years. And this year, we're also supporting them on the pilot project. So this is, you know, just one of the examples of how we typically work with corporates. I mean, it could be, again, UBS is one of our key clients, and we've been supporting, UBS Global Visionaries for quite a few years now. Mm-hmm. So we run workshops for them. We do one-to-one coaching for them, especially when they're getting ready to pitch to investors. So that's typically the model around which we operate, the training side of things.
And you've done over I was looking at your website. It's quite impressive the amount you've had over 85,000 downloads of your courses. You've helped people in 40 countries, raised over 260 million and coached over 200 innovators. Are there categories or areas that you guys are particularly hot on, or is it pretty broad? Like what sort of founders would sit under those 200? What are the kind of things they're doing?
It is broad, but having said that, there are certain sectors that we worked a lot more on, certain sectors that we ourselves, given that we are investors as well, are more interested in. I mean, healthcare is definitely one of them. Mm-hmm. Food tech is all, the kind of innovations that are coming up in agri-tech, food tech. That's another sector. Climate resilience. I've done a lot of work in education. So yes, there are a few sectors that we worked more around. But again, as far as trainings are concerned, we are quite sector agnostic. And given the fact that we were at Ashoka previously, and we worked with, and Ashoka's present in they have Ashoka fellows in more than 90 countries, right? So we got exposed to fellows working in all parts of the world on different kind of business model, different kind of market conditions. And I think that was very valuable, and it really informs the work that we do today at SIC.
So you still kind of work with them?
Oh yes, Ashoka is one of our biggest partners still. So yeah. So we still do a lot of trainings for Ashoka fellows, and any kind of social finance projects that Ashoka has, we support them on that.
And you've been in this sort of space quite some time now. Like, what are there any things that you've seen, say, since you were joining Ashoka in 2016-ish? Like, are there like major developments that you've witnessed, or areas where you think that the community or the ecosystem that we call impact investing has moved on, or do you think it's been relatively static?
Well, I think that can be answered in a couple of different ways, because it's about where impact investing was and is now, and where it should go ideally. Mm-hmm. And also in terms of geographies as well, right? Like, I'm in Singapore. I work a lot with European, in the European context as well. And there is a difference in terms of maturity when it comes to impact investing in Europe and in Asia. But that also means there's a lot of opportunity in Asia to kind of do more. But if I were to kind of put my finger on how impact investing is evolving, there are a couple of things that I can talk about. Firstly, ideally, I would, and that's my own perspective on, sort of where I would want to see it grow from where it is now, mm-hmm. is to kind of have more of a problem-solving approach. So most of the funds, and I'll explain what that means, because most of the funds that we see around are primarily sectoral, right? So,
yes.
Okay, we invest in water and sanitation, and, we invest in education, we invest in healthcare. But that approach, it rarely solves problems. It supports social enterprises, of course. It you give them funding and you help them deliver impact, but it doesn't solve social problems, right? Mm. And to solve social problems, what impact investing needs to evolve towards is to have this sort of a problem-solving approach, right? How do we invest in a way that actually solves a social problem? Mm-hmm. And it really can't be about investing in 10 different education companies, because that is your sectoral focus. It needs to be more about what is the problem within the education sector that you want to solve, right? Like, let's say If I were to give an example from let's say India, I'm just picking something up, like how can we reduce the gender inequity in education in, let's say, South India or West mm-hmm. India or whatever that is? I mean, mm-hmm. the statistics, 20% of the girls go to school vis-a-vis 70% boys going to school, right? So mm-hmm. how would you kind of reduce that gap, right? And if you have this kind of an approach, this would require you to study the entire value chain of the problem, right? And identify mm-hmm. where the gaps are. Once you identify the gaps, you figure out what are the ventures that are, you know, that have solutions to fill those gaps. And then you fund them with the right kind of capital, with the capital that they need. And so if you were purely sectoral in your approach, you will probably only be investing in education ventures and schools and colleges and so on.
Yeah.
But if you have a problem-solving approach, you will break down the problem. You will see what are the different contributors to it, right? Like, for example, how can you get more girls to sign up? That's one. Mm-hmm. Now, once you get girls to sign up, how do you keep them in school, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe at that point, you will perhaps invest in maybe a nutrition company. I mean, we all know that there are so many nutrition programs that have started with the intention of keeping children in school, right? And we've seen yeah. a lot of that happen in India as well. You send your daughter to school and she gets a free meal, you know, these free meal mm-hmm. programs that are happening. And maybe you'll invest in a solar energy company. And this comes on the back of one of the ventures in somewhere in mm-hmm. Africa, mm-hmm. where they started tying up with schools, providing mobile phone charging kiosks in schools, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the objective was that so of course, we know the mobile phone revolution, everyone has mobile phones, but still millions and millions of people are living in off-grid areas. So even if they have mobile phones, they can't charge them, they can't mm-hmm. use them, and so they're still disconnected from the digital economy. So what the solar company did was that it partnered with schools as an incentive for children to bring in the mobile phones to school so that they could charge.
Okay, right? Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, this is what keeps me going.
It's
honestly,
so cool.
Right?
Yeah.
So if you had, now if you were a fund who had this kind of a mm-hmm. problem-solving approach, mm-hmm. your portfolio will not look like 10 education companies. It would mm-hmm. probably have an education company. It would probably have a nutrition company.
Yeah.
It would probably have a solar energy company. But that's how you solve problems, right?
Yeah.
So, that's maybe some, well, hopefully that's where it will evolve to at some point. Having said that, of course, there's a lot of work happening. More needs to happen. But with this kind of a problem focused approach, or, you know, looking at it from a solutions lens, is what will actually solve social problems.
And that is what we always talk about in venture capital and other things, which is like, oh, problem solution, that should be like your first slide. But it feels to me like you say, very sectorally focused, like mm. people have the areas that they, you know, that are on piste, off piste, whatever, for their particular investment lens. And because of market opportunity and market sizing, you would not think maybe sending girls to school in South India is, you know, particularly attractive from a market opportunity perspective. Mm. So do you think a lot of it is around, oh, it's easier to create a digital platform for people in developed markets and have more confidence of a financial return? Like, or, I mean, these, some of these problems are seen as kind of more social, governmental, whatever, that should be fixed by that, rather than entrepreneurs who are stepping up and kind of addressing these social challenges. Where do you, I mean, I love what you've just described. It's very mm-hmm. exciting, because actually there's so many, you know, really out there in different ways that some of these problems could be addressed. But we seem to go in a kind of cookie cutter approach often. When I see some portfolios, it's like, oh yeah, this is, you know, you're into food or whatever, and these are exactly the kind of things I would expect to see in your portfolio. So you're getting exposure perhaps to much more creative almost approaches. Is the money going to come from philanthropy? Is it going to come from governments? Is it going to come from corporate sector starting to really understand their kind of purpose in the economy, as well as like how they deliver beyond just capital returns to their stakeholders? Where do you see this going based on this lens and this exposure that you're getting in parts of the world that are currently underfunded?
Well, to be honest, it can come from all kinds of players in the ecosystem, right, at various levels. And if you start with, and as you rightly said, I think the problem is with the kind of perspective and approach that we have currently, which is a very cookie cutter based approach. And it follows your typical commercial kind of investment where the focus lies on discussions around different aspects. So there has to be a change in thinking around what is important, what needs to be focused on when it comes to the impact sector. But I think another big shift in perspective is required from the point of view of understanding that these opportunities can be huge economic opportunities as well. So whether we are bringing corporates on board or we are talking about, you know, impact funds, VCs or whoever, these opportunities can really unlock. We know bottom of pyramid market is a multi-trillion dollar economic opportunity. So even if someone was to see it that way, it's just about understanding the value proposition and not just looking at it as some sort of a metric to tick, right? Okay, impact or ESG or whatever that is. But looking at what is the value proposition that can be unlocked if you were to invest in something like this. And I mean, a couple of examples actually come to my mind. For example, you know, back in the day when solar energy was sort of making the rounds, right? And it was very expensive. And even people who wanted to who were clued into the idea of solar energy or believed in it, there weren't enough investable opportunities at that time because it was expensive. But then markets changed, right? Prices dropped. As a result of which, innovation came in, more technology related business models came in, which unlocked the business, which unlocked the sector completely. And as an example, you know, not only did the crash in price provide affordability, but things like mobile phones, which were earlier seen as a way for just communication, they became a way for microfinance payments, right? Digital microfinance payments, which increased affordability for those who earn less than $2 to $3 a day. And that has revolutionized the solar energy consumption sector, right? We've seen so many organizations that work on that basis, you know, pay as you go service came as a result of that. So the technology, it opened up new business models, and those new business models led to, you know, absolute changes in the sectors that they came about in. So just having that mindset that this is a project in social in let's say south of India or wherever it is, it is bottom of the pyramid, last mile, and probably only the government should be looking at it. That's a very old way of looking at things. It could be a huge business opportunity as well. And that is why if you are into investing, you need to have this sort of an outlook. You need to be persistent to watch where the next innovation is coming from. And
I'm, you know, fascinated by this whole area because, you know, just I started out in telecoms and just seeing how much cheaper, obviously, everything's become. But to think that that would trigger the kind of changes that you're talking about is super exciting because, you know, we take for granted our phone, et cetera. But it's shocking actually to think that someone on $1 or $2 a day is charging a mobile phone, going into school or has a solar, you know, charger or something like that, being able to use that. And it really does change the game in some sense, because if, you know, we're no longer talking about people in poverty that are not connected, they are actually connected, and there's opportunities to create quite exciting ways to tap into that massive market bottom of the pyramid, as you described, that will be socially progressive for them, that will stimulate economic development, that will also bring their children and families into new opportunities of better education, of, you know, better jobs, and a future that you know, is certainly more decarbonized or at least more in harmony than what we're currently seeing with this sort of top-down approach. So that I think everything you've described has just been absolutely fascinating. I'm really glad you sort of spent the time with us. Who are there, anyone you're trying to reach out to? Is there people that should be getting in touch with Social Innovation Circle and tapping into this wonderful knowledge? Like perhaps you could, you know, just share anyone you'd like to speak to through this medium.
So basically anybody who's interested in the field of impact, right? We are a circle, we are a community. We would love to welcome anyone and everyone who's interested in learning more, who's interested in participating, who's interested in contributing. So yes, our doors are open. And I mean, personally, I'm very active on LinkedIn. If anyone wants to reach out, very happy to connect with them.
Amazing. We'll make sure your contact is on the show notes. Anshul, thank you so much for taking the time to tell us about your journey. And thank you for the amazing work that you're doing with Social Innovation Circle.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here today and speaking with you. Thank you.